This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Justin E. Bell. He's the composer for The Outer Worlds, and it's great to meet you and have a chance to talk.
Likewise, Kate. I'm really, really glad to talk to you today.
You know, this score for The Outer Worlds is, it's just so gorgeous. And you're the audio director at Obsidian as well. And so I would imagine that must have been a real advantage as you were developing the music, because you were, I would assume, kind of developing it as the game was being built too. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So as you mentioned, I am the audio director here. So I work with everything sound related, sound effects, voice, and music. And I work with the game teams. I work with the game directors. I work with the other leads. And we all sort of are together working on this project. That in a way, that is kind of an advantage because it's sort of an insider look into the whole process.
Oh, yeah, sure. And there's no like disconnect waiting for the devs to send you concept art from another time zone or waiting for them to get you assets so that you can kind of keep moving forward. And so as the game was, you know, first being kicked around at Obsidian, you know, what were some of the initial ideas that kind of were giving you ideas for a direction to take the music?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. So there were initial conversations with Tim Kaine and Leonard Boyarsky, who are the co-game directors for the project. They each sort of brought their own spin on what they wanted to hear from the music. And Tim, he really enjoys ambient music, ambient electronic music in specific, sort of along the Brian Eno vein. And so he was sort of looking for music that was unobtrusive, but set a strong mood. And it's sort of the type of music where when it's there, you don't realize it, but when it's gone, you do. And Leonard, he referenced, it was a Coen Brothers movie, has Jeff Bridges in it, True Grit.
Oh, sure. And I know that vibe too, because that is actually a really, I mean, both of those are great ideas. And so did you have to end up like choosing between the two of them or?
Yeah. So yeah, the True Grit is sort of there's a lot of, hymnal references in that, and Americana, mm-hmm. in that score. Taking both of those and bringing them together into one thing is definitely a unique challenge. And finding which elements made sense and trying to bridge that gap was definitely something that it actually took me quite a long time. I struggled with it initially because and this was just my own personal struggle, is that I had a hard time sort of adopting these two styles that I'm familiar with, but not necessarily versed on as a composer. And that took some time to dial in. And I think once the moment that it really clicked for me was I sort of am only able to write in the way that I am able to write. And what I mean by that is that when I work on a game, I'm playing the game and I react to it emotionally, right? I sort of see what the direction is and what the art is like and what the story is like and what the context is. And I sort of ingest that and meditate on that from an emotional perspective. So, you know, it finally clicked for me when I sort of liberated myself from feeling obligated to write in either style that I didn't necessarily feel comfortable writing in. And then once I did that and I started writing in ways that in my own musical vernacular and then trying to take elements from those two different references and inform what I was writing in more sort of musical ways, less necessarily direct referential ways, it started to become a lot easier for me.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll bet. I'm sure finding that kind of the key that unlocks everything, it's got to be kind of nerve-wracking at times, because you're dealing with deadlines and you've got to come up with something. And so what do you do to kind of get your creativity going?
Yeah, that is a tough one. And they're sort of at odds, right? Sometimes. I mean, and that's not everyone is like that, right? There are certainly composers who, you know, doesn't matter what deadline they have, they're able to produce amazing results. And sometimes I'm able to do that. And sometimes I'm just like a deer caught in the headlights.
Wow. Well, the thing that really struck me is the theme, hope, because it just kind of captures that feeling of, you know, kind of early science fiction films where going into space was an adventure and it was going to be mostly fun. You didn't know what you were going to run into, but that theme, it really like has been stuck in my head. So mission accomplished. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It kind of captures that initial excitement of starting Outer Worlds, because yeah, they had this vision for what was going to happen with the corporation, and obviously it didn't turn out that way, but right in the beginning there, that theme, it just really captures it. It's really fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Was that something that you wrote early on in the score and then built on it, or do you have to kind of circle back and come up with it later in the process?
We actually did have a different theme for quite a long time. It was much more subdued. It was piano with just a light bed of strings underneath it, and it was much more somber, much more of a somber tone. And I liked it, but I felt like it didn't make a strong impression. So it took me a little bit of time to sort of finally come to terms with what I felt like the title theme should become. And it wasn't really until the middle of this year where things started to click. And I was just thinking about it a lot. You know, I knew I had to write this thing and I really wanted it to be something that was really special. And so, you know, as I do with music, I just sort of ruminate on it for a really long time. And it was interesting because one night, and this happens to me frequently, one night I was just kind of lying in bed, couldn't sleep. I was thinking about the project and things we had to do. And melodies just started popping in my head. And, you know, I've got a family, you know, I've got five kids, and, you know, my wife is asleep. And so I sort of creep out to the living room with my phone, and I started humming and all these melodies into my phone and recording them. And I must have been sitting on the couch humming melodies for a good 2 hours. And pretty much everything, every sort of thematic idea made its way into the final result of Hope.
That is so cool. It must have been kind of cathartic to finally get all of those pieces out of your head and at least into the phone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And not only, and it was a real gift, to be honest, because it wasn't just the melodies. It was, you know, the entire thing. It was the melodies to the harmonies to the, even the orchestration all just sort of came to me at once and is very, very close to, what you hear now. So it doesn't always work out that great. You know, it's not always sort of gifted to me in that sort of way, but it was this time. And I'm very happy with the way that it turned out as well.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, let's talk about the orchestration because it's really, really beautiful. The pieces that use a full orchestra just are stunning. They're shimmering, and the way the melody kind of bounces back and forth from one section to another. And there are a few cues where the French horn is just like, it's so noble sounding and so spectacular. And did you use a live orchestra for this?
We did, yes. We work with an orchestra in Hungary, Budapest, Hungary. There, it's the Budapest Art Orchestra, and we've been working with them for years. We recorded all sections there. There wasn't a lot of woodwind writing in there, although the score does feature different types of flutes pretty heavily. It was mostly just strings and brass in Budapest, and then we did some pickup brass recordings, specifically horns, in Nashville.
Yeah, the horn sound and that brass sound just provides such a nice anchor to the music. And one of the things that I was interested to read about in an interview that you did recently, I guess it was a blog, was that because there's so much exploration in the game, you wrote really extended cues, like 8 or 9 or even 10 minutes. And I think that's really neat because then obviously you don't hear the looping points. But I'm wondering what kind of a challenge that was, as opposed to writing, you know, little stems that you know are going to be layered on top of each other.
Mm. Yeah. You know, if I'm being honest, it comes naturally to me to write in sort of long form fashion. It didn't always used to come naturally to me. I used to struggle with that a lot. And I would be lucky if I could write 30 or 45 seconds of music. And I think I've just sort of figured out how to spin something out and have it last for a long time. And I think it's partially just due to the way that I like to write music and the kind of music that I like to hear, which is tends to be sort of slower tempo, much slower tempo and frequently minimal. And that can be stretched out over a long period of time pretty easily. You just have to sort of allow things, well, at least the way that I approach it is that I just sort of allow things to have, I give things space and the time to develop and time to ruminate on small things like a single chord or a single melody line. And, you know, I'm a big fan of negative space in the music as well. And it's not a way of padding it. I just like the music to breathe and have moments where the negative space is music, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. There's a gorgeous cue that you included in the soundtrack called Live Free, Die Free. And it does exactly that. It's a beautiful chamber piece with a melody. It's very simple. It kind of reminded me of Arvo Pärt, whose music is all, you know, very, very simple. And there are long stretches. It's almost like when you're talking to somebody at the end of an evening and you're both like starting to fall asleep and there are like long pauses in the conversation.
Right. Yes. And that's a really interesting way to look at it. And Arvo Pärt is, I can't say that he's a direct influence, but I love his music. And, I think that it does speak to me because he takes his time, and I definitely see the analogy that you just mentioned.
you know, there are so many interesting places where you get to go in the game, like Emerald Vale and Edgewater and Stellar Bay. And so how did you give those their own unique musical character? Or what was it about each of those places that were cues for you to give them their own kind of musical identity?
Yeah. So Emerald Vale is the first area of the game, and that's where you begin your journey as a player. And what I really wanted to give to the player was a sense of wonder and a sense of adventure, but also to allow the rest of the soundscape to have a sort of a call and response with the music. So there's these big statements, you know, where there's these sort of very drawn out melodies followed by, you know, these big, huge sounding chords in the low register, and that followed by, you know, nice big rests. And that was to sort of, you know, give you that sense of grandeur, of wonder, and then allow the environment to sort of fill in the gaps in between phrases to really immerse the player and to just have them suspend disbelief. Melodically, it's sort of, it verges on becoming atonal because, you know, it's not exactly a tonal sound that you're hearing. There's a tritone in there. And so it's tonal sounding, but there's always something off about it, which is sort of my musical way of saying, you know, this world is wondrous, but it's not all right.
Yeah, because that's exactly how it is. I mean, you discover right off the bat, pretty much the first person that you run into is, yeah, things are really off. And so it's so interesting that you were able to put that in the music too and kind of reinforce that feeling of things not being quite right. I loved the guitar riffs and that kind of Lonesome West quality that you got for Edgewater. I think that was such a great sound.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that one was interesting. So we always knew that we wanted the town of Edgewater to feel like a frontier town, because it really is. You know, Emerald Vale is a very hostile environment. There are volcanoes in the distance, you know, and there's constant geothermal activity in the region. And then there's dangerous creatures left and right. And this colony, in for all intents and purposes, is really just kind of hanging on. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be sort of made of durable stuff to be able to endure that. And so, you know, we kind of wanted to call back to, you know, yeah, that's kind of what it was like in the you know, in the frontier days of American history, where, you know, life wasn't easy. And so that was a callback to that thematic idea.
Thank you.
Yeah, it really fits so well with the sort of broken down and stuff's not working and there are very few people around. It gives it that kind of lonely sort of broken, rough and ready sort of vibe too, which is very cool.
Thank you.
Stellar Bay is another interesting place where you go. And I love the kind of delicacy that you got with the music for that.
Thank you. Yeah. And Stellar Bay is, it's what we call a quest hub, which is you go there and then the player receives odd jobs, for lack of a better term, from different characters in that area. And they send you off onto quests to go complete for them. And so in quest hubs specifically, you tend to spend a lot of time there talking to people. So the music has to be pleasant, and it has to be, while you're listening to someone talk, you don't want music that's sort of distracting your attention away from the objective, which is to talk to these people and get your quests from them. So, the choice was very deliberate to make the music sound very pleasing, sound very inviting, because this is also, this Stellar Bay is sort of, it's this walled off town in the middle of a very, very hostile environment where Emerald Vale was hostile. The planet of Monarch is incredibly hostile. There's sulfuric pools and, dangerous creatures everywhere. And it is not, it's not a hospitable environment. So I wanted to give a sense of solace in this town, and that's why I sort of leaned in that direction.
You know, all the way through the game, there is, you really get wrapped up with the characters and the story, and you have to make some really tough decisions, and there's no necessarily right decision. And so that emotion, that this incredible writing and the voice acting brings to the game. It must have been such an interesting and really satisfying collaboration between all that emotion in the game and these great characters, and then providing the music that goes along with that.
Yeah, absolutely. The game straddles multiple sort of fault lines, for lack of a better term. You know, I mean, on the one hand, the subject matter is actually pretty intense, but then there's sort of this humor to the game and the writing that kind of balances that out. And then there's sort of like, even though we're not deliberately trying to make a political statement, and in fact, we are not trying to make a political statement, there are political undertones in the game. I mean, that's just kind of part of the storyline. And so finding out how the music complements those various things definitely was its own balancing act. And I think there was an interview on NPR, I don't know, it was probably 13 or 14 years ago, with Tom Waits. And he was talking about a score that he did for a movie. He was talking about how there were these, there was a scene where there was these children and they were on a merry-go-round, and it was done in slow motion. And it was, you know, the director wanted it to have sort of a nostalgic effect, or to celebrate, you know, sort of the carefree quality of childhood. And, you know, there was different ways that you can approach that. And, you know, so what Tom Waits said was, you know, rather than just having the music be on the nose and celebrating childhood, he made it, you know, sort of a ballad of someone in their, you know, in the twilight of their life, looking back and reflecting. And it was sort of, you know, a sentimental ballad. And he said that the reason why he was doing that was because, even though the subject matter seems to beg for one approach, by hitting it at a right angle, and I think those were his words, it brings more nuance and more substance to the conversation, because there's multiple threads going on now. And so I view sort of, that's kind of how I like to approach writing the music. So, you know, if for example, if the storyline is starts to get a little intense, there are absolutely times where the music should follow that. But if the storyline is intense for extended periods of time, I think there's only so much intensity that an audience is willing to endure. So I tend to try to pick another avenue and kind of go with that and highlight that in addition to what the narrative subtext is trying to say.
That's really fascinating. And Tom Waits is one of my all-time favorite artists. I'm sorry I missed that interview, because I bet it was really cool.
It was a while ago.
Well, but what's so interesting about coming at it that way and approaching it that way is you're not clubbing the player over the head with superimposing what you think they should be feeling during a cut scene or a particular stretch of dialogue or exploration. So that's a really great way of approaching it and making it, you know, kind of letting the player sort of own the emotions, I guess.
So. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. We're providing them with a variety of emotions, and they can cue into whichever they would like.
You mentioned early on that there is a kind of a square hymn-like feeling to the music from True Grit. And one of the cues that really brought that home to me is Journey's End. And I haven't finished the game yet, so I don't know where it fits in the context. But to me, it had a kind of a squareness and such a comfortable feeling. It's like it felt really familiar and almost like listening to music by Aaron Copland. So I'd love to know what the inspiration for that piece is and the context, maybe, if you can tell me without any spoilers.
Well, there's a little clue in the title of the piece of music.
Right.
So maybe I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
So the way that I like to look at those pieces of music is the player has been through quite a lot. You know, they've experienced the highest of highs and the lowest of lows and this thrilling adventure that sort of is a roller coaster of emotion. And I tend to be a very sentimental person, and I love that nostalgic feeling, and I love, you know, beautiful music that tugs at the heartstrings. And I sort of draw upon my own life and my own life's experiences and its ups and downs. And I sort of try to imagine, you know, I try to pretend that this is a real thing that happened, all these events, even though they're not. I try to put myself into that character, if you will, and try to reflect on how would that make me feel. And then I try to express that musically, and that's how that piece of music came about.
Wow. Yeah, it's just, it's almost like a set of theme and variations, and the way it just rolls on and on. Because again, it's one of those really wonderful extended cues. And honestly, I was sad when it ended, because it's just, it's such a wonderful, comforting sound. So,
thank you. Thank you. Can I tell you a little funny story about that?
Yeah, sure.
So as I was writing it, I knew I wanted it to go. I wanted it to go on and on. And so one thing that I never really do is transpose up a half step, even though that's sort of a age-old device that composers have been using forever to introduce excitement. And I just wanted to see what it would be like if I took similar material and reorchestrated it in different settings. But really the only change was the orchestration and modulating up a half step. And I basically did that like 4 or 5 times, to the point where I felt like it might have been distasteful. But it seems to actually have worked really well.
Yeah, yeah, it totally does, because you don't really notice the repetition then with these little, you know, transitions up a half a step and stuff. So very sneaky, very clever. Well, let's talk about the combat music a little bit, because even though you don't hear it a lot, it still is part of the world and part of your music. And yet it kind of seems to me like you sort of were able to use a different palette. I mean, there's some really interesting instruments in the combat music that don't appear in like the exploration music and that kind of thing.
Yes, it's primarily percussive, basically just, you know, bunch of different wild hand percussion and stick percussion instruments performed by a really amazing percussionist. So basically it's that percussion plus this string quintet that is playing very, very aggressively, really digging into the bow. And yeah, it's absolutely something that you don't really hear elsewhere. And it was just an effort to sort of transition away from the languid pace of most of the ambient music.
Yeah, and it really does that. Was it a challenge to make the transition between the ambient music and then combat? I mean, there's something kind of in between there, too, with cues that had a little more intensity to them.
Yeah, there's definitely a balance, and you're trying to meet that balance when you're transitioning to something with that much contrast. And I think that a lot of times you can count on the frame of mind of the player, because from their perspective, they're not really looking at it in musical terms. They're just sort of playing the game and experiencing. So if they're in an environment and they notice a creature in the distance, internally, they're already starting to get a little bit stressed out or excited about the prospect of getting into a battle. So their psychological frame of mind is almost preparing them for what's to come. So when there's that big contrast that happens when transitioning from this mellow ambient music to this kind of aggressive percussive combat music, it almost just kind of works because you've mentally prepared for that moment.
Wow.
And even when it's a surprise, you know, it lends itself to that surprise.
Yeah. So just like in real life, you're sort of like the adrenaline kicks in. And so, yeah, that's very cool. I think it's cool that, you know, you can get through the game without doing a ton of combat. But when it's there, it's really kind of fun and satisfying. So,
yeah, that was one of the pillars we wanted. You know, the entire team worked very, very hard to provide that option to the player.
Yeah. So are there plans for a soundtrack release?
Yes. We are talking about that right now. Our publishing partner, Private Division, is very interested in releasing the soundtrack. And it's something that we're actively discussing now.
That's fantastic. Well, Justin, we've covered a lot. We've really looked under the hood. But is there anything that I missed that you would like people to know about, or any particular cue that really stands out that you're especially proud of how it fits in the game or anything else that I missed?
No, I'm just so grateful that people are enjoying the game and the outpouring of support that I have received for the efforts that we've done on the game team, on the audio team, which is just, you know, it's amazing to get that feedback. And for the music itself, has just been overwhelming. And we are so ecstatic and we're so happy that people enjoy the game. And we made this game for our audience, and it's just so gratifying that they enjoy it.
Wow. Well, Justin, thank you so much for taking some time to talk about it, because it's just a phenomenal score, and I've really, really been enjoying listening to it on its own and then listening in the game, too. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Kate.